Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic. It's time now for Cuz Radio.
What up, Cuz?
Deshaun Jackson gets a block. Are you kidding?
Talking with the Cuz.
Yo, Cuz. How you doing?
Stairs rips one into the night.
Stolen by the doctor. Yes, he's got it. Think here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slammed up.
Look, Cuz, don't even try it, okay?
Now here's Anthony Gargano.
Why don't you get the hell out of here, Cuz?
What is going on? Everyone, 97.5 The Fanatic. This is Hunter Brody filling in for Anthony Gargano here on the Anthony Gargano Show. Connor Thomas is producing. And we'll start right off by saying this. I hope everybody out there is safe. It is nasty. It is no joke. I'm a South Jersey native. I live about 10, 15 minutes away from Mullica Hill, where it was hit really hard. And it was really scary to see those videos on Twitter and to see what happened, what damage was done to a lot of those houses. And then driving into the studio today, I saw some of the Philadelphia side of things with the water and all. So make sure you're safe out there. Don't force anything that doesn't need to be forced, and make sure you and your family is safe. So that's where we begin there. In terms of the sports world, I'm not over yesterday and Ben Simmons and the Sixers drama. I'd be lying if I said I was. We talked about it in reference to a scab that reopened. Well, it takes more than just one day for that bad boy to heal as well. And that's basically how I'm feeling. It's disappointing, right? Now, it's not as raw. It's not as emotional in the moment. When we started the show yesterday was the moment Joel Embiid was going on his Twitter raid, and he was going on his Twitter threads just nonstop throwing shade at Sixers fans and some others out there. So we had a night to let it digest. I came up with a series of questions to attack throughout the day, and it's going to vary with the 76ers team. It's not specifically on Ben or specifically on Joe, but they come into play as well. So we'll start with this one. Does this help or hurt Joel Embiid in terms of on the court whenever Ben Simmons is not here? Now, of course, it matters what type of player you get in return. But we're under the assumption at this point it's not Damian Lillard. And if it becomes one, then so be it. And then we get excited and we're happy and we're thrilled and we're waving our pom-poms that it's Damian Lillard. I don't feel that's the case at this very moment. Therefore, I see it more in that secondary category of the D'Angelo Russells, the Colin Sextons, maybe something with Sacramento, even though there was a report last night saying they're not really deep into talks because De'Aaron Fox is not on the table. Halliburton is not available. So what direction would the Sixers really go with the Sacramento Kings? And that's fair. But if you land a Colin Sexton, a Malcolm Brogdon, a player in that category, does this help or hurt Joel Embiid? Now, right from the jump, my initial reaction would tell you it's probably going to hurt you just because of the what if factor with Ben Simmons. What if he's aggressive? Not about the jump shot, but last season it was because he evaporated. If he didn't evaporate and was just an aggressive version of Ben Simmons that we've seen for a decent amount of time here over 5 years, he's been aggressive at times, and that does change the game. From the surface right now, I probably believe that it would hurt you. But let me twist it the other way. Are we so numb to the X and O strategy of Ben Simmons that we are forgetting what a real primary ball handler would do with Joel Embiid offensively? We watch Clint Capela tear up the Sixers, not because Clint Capela is some special, amazing player, but Trae Young really dictated the pace of play and really helped that offense mold into this brand that was very successful for them. Joel Embiid is 10 billion times the player of Clint Capela. So if you have him offensively, possession by possession in a half-court set, playing with someone who might be a lesser talent from Ben Simmons, individually speaking, but might fit a better brand offensively with Joel, where you can get possibly more out of him. We've witnessed over and over again defenses watch Joel Embiid with his back to the basket around the foul line extended, and it's so much easier to now pounce and attack and bring two defenders, whether it's from the free throw line, whether it's from the baseline. Confuse Joel, because one of the areas that he continues to get better at but needs to work on it even more is passing out of the double team, finding his open teammates. It's easier when there's another threat by the perimeter that is your point guard, if that is the case in that specific possession. So, you know, I'm kind of conflicted because the individual standpoint on this, the view of Ben is, yeah, you probably have a lesser Joel Embiid, a lesser way to operate offensively. But even though it's not as much of a skill talent individual-wise, is there something to just making it make sense with playing the game of basketball, running a pick and roll, utilizing a pick and pop, basic fundamentals in basketball that you can't do right now? Maybe you can. And there's some other fantastic questions that we're going to dive a bit deeper on. How about the contract? Did Joel know where this Ben Simmons situation was at the time that he signed this contract? Does it matter? Does it make you feel differently if he did or if he didn't? Does Doc Rivers now have more time? Is there less pressure on Doc Rivers? Is there more pressure on Doc Rivers to figure this out? Tobias Harris, Seth Curry, Danny Green. There's a lot of avenues that we're going to explore today with this Sixers team, knowing that Ben Simmons is going to be out. I don't see a way that Daryl Morey makes this really uncomfortable to the point where you're fining him in training camp for anything long term. You want to enter the season. See, let's look at the Eagles. Last year was sloppy, it was ugly, and it was miserable. Nobody felt good about it at all. Now we're hearing Zach Ertz is having the most fun he's ever had showing up to work in the last X amount of years. There's something to be said about just chopping off the ugliness and heading in another direction. They did that with Nick Sirianni, Jonathan Gannon. So with Ben Simmons, I'm with that same mindset. I don't want it to linger. I don't want it to smell bad. Chop it off where it's at and let's go grab your secondary type of player and let's move forward, because you can see the difference in culture that it sets when you're entering an 82-game season here, just like the Eagles are now entering a 17-game season. There's a big shift in vibe. So, Connor, good morning, man. How are you, and how was last night for you? Everything okay?
Morning, man. Yeah, everything's fine. I'm in South Philadelphia, so there wasn't a lot of issues there. It's part of the city that's pretty well built up, and luckily we don't have a lot of water around us that can actually get onto the roadways. So I was good, luckily. Thank goodness. Everything was all right by you, though, you said? Good to go?
Yeah, everything was good by me. Weirdly, because normally I lose power when it rains, right? on a normal Tuesday night, just a little bit of rain, my lights will flicker for about 5 minutes and then it reboots. I didn't lose power. None of that happened during one of the biggest storms we've ever had. So it was a little bizarre for the fiance and I. We were watching a movie knowing eventually, that's right, I watched the movie because...
Proud of you.
There was no...
Because you knew it was going to cut out.
No,
that's why you watched the movie. You're like,
why?
I know this is going to cut out about an hour in because of the power, so I'll pretend like I'm into it.
That's not why. It's because there was no Phillies game on. It was a night where I thought, let's take advantage. Let's use my time wisely to sneak in a movie with the fiance. So we were watching while we were waiting for it to happen, and it never ended up actually blacking out. So we watched the movie.
Good work. Well, that's a nice night that you guys had. Yeah. You earned some brownie points, too.
Yes, I did. But your thoughts on the Sixers and just if this would hurt or help Joel with moving on from Ben Simmons?
Well, really, it stops and starts at the half-court line. Like, it's different on either side of that line when you're the Sixers, talking about whether they're playing on the offensive side of the ball or defensive. Now, offensively, I think you're absolutely spot on. Like, that double team issue that Joel Embiid has would significantly be helped out by added spacing if you just put a point guard out there who's willing and able to shoot the basketball. I think you can find a guy who's not as great of a facilitator, obviously, as Ben, but who can handle the ball and can shoot the rock enough to space the floor to give Joel a new lease on life, if you will, like a totally new perspective of how to play offense in the NBA. Like, you saw it in the Atlanta series, and you were wondering, how were the Sixers shooting this low percentage from three at points in that series? Well, what happens is the ball gets sent into Joel Embiid in the post, and he's posting up. The double comes, but before you can send it to the guy in the corner, the Danny Green, the Tobias Harris, a guy that's sitting there in the corner to knock down that corner three, Ben's man has already rotated down and covered that guy. So you don't get the open look from three, and you have a guy standing up at the top of the key in Ben Simmons who doesn't add anything to your offensive game. There's no way that bringing in a guy who can shoot the basketball doesn't add spacing and make that offense play a little bit smoother. But on the other end, you saw what happened with Joel Embiid, and specifically looking at that, where do you play Trae Young when he gets into the lane? They picked Joel Embiid apart to start that series because Trae Young would get to the foul line. Joel Embiid would step up, and they'd throw the lob down to Clint Capella. It's an easy dunk. And that was because Danny Green was covering Trae Young. When they switched Ben onto Trae, that was neutralized. But now you don't have Ben. And a lot of other teams are going to try and employ that strategy. Easier penetration because one of your better perimeter and point defenders is gone. And Joel Embiid is now going to have to play that make-a-choice defense. That makes him less of a rim protector, and it makes him worse defensively. So it's going to be tough on the defensive end for Joel Embiid this season.
I agree with that. It definitely changes things. And you saw them try to utilize the drop coverage, which was heavily dissected by the Brett Brown haters that it wasn't very effective. It's a tough decision to make. It's not easy. You get stuck in that middle ground, and it's either a floater by this fast, shifty guard in Trae Young that can throw the floater over you, or Clint Capella is going to dunk it on your face. So it's a very tough decision from a strategic standpoint. But you're right, there is this element of when you lose that power defensively to defend by the perimeter. And by the way, he can do it against guards. He did it against forwards as well. He can even do it against centers to a degree. Also, you know, you talk about Joel Embiid missing time early in the playoffs. Well, the fact that you have the ability to utilize a 6'10 point guard as your center can't just be thrown out the window either. We had callers even yesterday claim that, well, Joel Embiid's defense, Ben Simmons' defense is only good because of Joel Embiid. And I'll be the first to admit, I can't stand Ben right now. I want nothing to do with Ben Simmons, but I'm not going to act as if there's zero talent involved and there's nothing that he does well and he's only good defensively because of Joel. That's just a horrendous statement. You might lose some defensive situations, but it comes back to, can you make up for that with your scoring ability as your point guard? You will not have a facilitator as strong as Ben, especially in the open floor. Do you need someone who could facilitate as special as Ben Simmons if that individual is willing to actually score? And I would say no, because that goes back to the whole, he leads the league in three-point assists. Well, it's easy to do that when you're never shooting the ball. You're always passing. All these other point guards are actually shooting the rock, which would take away from those assists. So that doesn't mean those other point guards are any less of a facilitator or any less or worse in that area. They just also are willing to take open shots. So it comes down to when you're trying to counter one another, what you do lose on defense, I think, isn't as important as what you gain on offense. Gaining more on offense is needed because as special as defense is in the NBA, and it is important, you got to be able to score. Elite offense beats elite defense. Great offense beats great defense. You need to be able to break down a defender and get your shots and get the separation that you're looking for. That's way more important than a perimeter defender in playoff basketball.
Yeah, in playoff basketball where you're running those set offenses and it's more of a half-court game, absolutely. But one of Ben's other great strengths is transition and being able to get out and run. And even if you go and you get another guy who can run a transition offense, one of the biggest parts of Ben's transition game was his ability at 6'10 to grab a rebound over even interior players, a 4 or a 5, and just straight out break. You're not going to find a guy that rebounds to Ben's capacity and can take the team on the break right from getting that rebound. There's an extra outlet pass in there and slows your pace a little bit. So that transition, like, you can get a guy who spreads the floor in the half court offense, but you lose a huge element of that transition offense that has become a staple of what we've seen the Sixers play over the past couple seasons with Ben Simmons at the point. So sure, offensively, in set offensive situations, you're going to be better, but that transition offense takes a hit. I don't know if you come out on the plus side there.
Well, a transition offense throughout a regular season is absolutely way more significant than the postseason. And I was wondering, while the Sixers were rolling through the Eastern Conference in the regular season, they were winning a ton of games, knowing that sports evolve and they transition and they move in a new direction as the decades move along, I wondered, would playoff basketball become more open? Would it be a super fast LA fitness style of basketball where we're so used to, okay, here's your point guard. He's going to dribble. He's going to wait for a pick. He's going to set up a play. Like, that's what the traditional old point guard would do back in the 90s. He would look to get the best shot for your team. Is that now heading in a whole new direction with up and down, pop threes at will? There's no such thing as a bad shot if you're pulling up in transition 2 seconds into the shot clock, because we have now made that a part of basketball in 2021. There were times watching the postseason, specifically early, where there were some 8th seed teams still involved, 7th seed teams, where I was impressed with the pace and thought maybe that would correlate more to how the Sixers would run, knowing that's Ben Simmons' strong suit. But once you get to the more lethal opponents, when you get to the scarier superstars, when you get to the more big-name guys, it slowed right back down, and it's something that just won't work with Ben, unfortunately.
Yeah, we even saw a game between the Brooklyn Nets and the Milwaukee Bucks in the playoffs this past year where the final score was in what, like the high 70s, low 80s? Because for the last like...
Real quick, though, was that an ugly game because they just weren't making shots?
Well, no, they were playing like isolation basketball down the stretch. Like, it was just clear out, I want this guy, we're not going to run any offensive set, and one guy's going to take on one guy. And that's all it was. So it's weird. It's almost like a case-by-case basis, but I think ultimately playoff basketball will always revert back to that half-court set. Even if some teams come in, like you see a Sacramento Kings, and they want to run pace like crazy and see if that'll work. Even if one or two anomalies happen with teams like that, I think it'll always revert back to that half-court set.
You're probably right, and I just remember one of those games being so miserable. It might have been the Eastern Conference Finals, but it was just an ugly, ugly game of ball, but it was close. So no one was scoring. They were all missing their shots. There was maybe 6-7 minutes of no scoring at all, but it was close, so it kept you entertained and on the edge of your seat. But you're right, isolation to Kevin Durant. But that's how the NBA works, right? Get the ball to your best player and let them operate. And the problem is with the 76ers, it's difficult to do that at the center position, even if your center is special. Jokic, Joel Embiid, these players, just due to the nature of the game and the way you need perimeter play, it's difficult to just hand it off to a center and then for 5 straight minutes in the fourth quarter say, I need you to work with your back to the basket. I need you to back somebody down. I need you to do a jab step and hit a jump shot. I need you to hit a three. It's just difficult to demand that, and that's where you need that counterbalance of somebody with the ball in their hands. And I don't know if Tobias is going to be able to be the number two to help you out in that area. He was a strong Batman, or a strong Robin to the Batman, I should say, all throughout the regular season. But there were some tough moments involved, for sure, when we got to the nitty-gritty of it.
Absolutely, and Tobias becomes one of your main wing defenders now. And he had a great defensive year last year. He really stepped up as a defensive player. I think part of that is the team defensively was awesome with the addition of Danny Green, with the emergence of Ben Simmons as that defensive player of the year candidate, with Joel Embiid being his rim-protecting self. But now you're going to have to put Tobias out on an island a little bit more because Danny Green's another year older. We saw in the playoffs how the lack of speed at this point in his career can hurt you. And does that affect Tobias's offensive game? Having to be one of those primary perimeter defenders as opposed to being Ben can take their best defender and I'll take number two or number three could be tiring him out, and it could make it tougher for him to produce on the offensive end.
That's a great point. Tobias did pick it up defensively a lot last season, but if he's going to have to play a bigger role on that side of the court as well, to the best of his ability, I mean, you can't just demand him to be some excellent defender, but he picked it up considering where he once was. That's going to be a lot more difficult for him to now produce when you need him to get a bucket because he's using a lot of energy on the other side. All right, let's get to the phones here. 610-632-0975. Let's start things off with Mitch in Phoenix. Mitch, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Mitch.
Yeah, Mitch is in Phoenix, and believe it or not, we got some rain.
Oh, yeah? Is it okay out there, though?
Well, you know, when you get 8 minutes worth of rain here, they call it a storm.
That's true.
Yeah, you guys tired talking about Ben Simmons?
Am I tired?
Tiring?
It does, but I'll tell you what. It's not fake. It's all real. And we get fired up when this comes up. This resurfaces. And when something like yesterday happens, it makes the blood boil. So, yeah, I mean, let's be real. It's been 5 years of talking about one individual not shooting a basketball in the NBA. Is that ridiculous? It absolutely is. But there's some athletes in this city where when their name pops up and when this is franchise changing to who the 76ers are going to be for the next handful of years. This move could potentially be the difference in winning a championship or not. So it should be stressed to the level that it is at the same time.
Well, I don't want to tell you something that maybe you already know subconsciously, but the 76ers are not winning a championship anytime soon.
Yeah, you know what? Everyone says that all the time about every single team, right? The Eagles are never going to win one. Well, they won one in 2017 after a season of 7-9. It's so hard to win a championship that when someone claims they're never going to win a championship, okay, you got a 95% chance of being right, because it's, if not even more, because it's so difficult to actually do it. So you might be right. They might not win one soon, but that's because it's very hard to do so.
You know, I live in a city that has four major sports, Phoenix, Arizona. They only celebrated one championship in the history of this city, and that's the baseball team. They don't care about contracts. They don't care about tweets. They don't care about who's going whatever. They go with their lives on a daily basis. I don't think we even have a sports radio station here in town.
Well, what is that reference? How does that reference us here? Is that a good thing? Are you saying that's good that Phoenix doesn't care about their sports teams, and if Ben Simmons was in their town, they wouldn't talk about him?
Well, you guys rehashed the same thing over and over again.
Well, I mean, Mitch, I mean, come on, man. With all due respect here, like, we're trading Ben Simmons. This is huge. This is major to what this city's all about. This is 76ers basketball. If Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are going to be moved, that's going to be a hot topic. This guy's holding the franchise back to making that next push. We just talked about how difficult it is to win a title. And we have someone who is very skilled, very talented in nine different areas of the game, isn't in the one standard part, which is shooting a basketball, and yet we're not supposed to talk about because Phoenix is just doing so well, going by the wayside, just doing whatever they want to do. They're having all this success. Maybe we should follow it. I mean, I don't even understand what the point of the call was.
I don't know, to tell us that Phoenix got some rain and that they don't care about their sports team.
Yeah, I mean, what? We're not supposed to care about Ben Simmons?
Yeah, maybe Mitch was trying to get us to move out there and start a station in Phoenix so he could listen to us more. I don't know what the point of that call was.
He'd call into that station too and say, why are you yelling about the Diamondbacks? Because they're 44 games under 500, Mitch.
Let's put this together. Why do you think there's not a station out there? Well, maybe it's because nobody cares, like you just told us. It's not exactly the blueprint for a city. And let's be honest. Would you rather root for a team in Philadelphia or Phoenix?
Yeah, come on. I can't believe that's the way
the passion is beautiful here.
It is.
So you can keep your little bit of rain. We'll take the floods to have teams that people are passionate about.
Absolutely. 610-632-0975. Now is a good time to get in. We will start with you, Devin, Tom, Chuck, and everybody else on the other side. I'm Hunter Brody, filling in for the Cuz here on the Anthony Gargano Show.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Joel, congratulations. Thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, what do you do in the offseason, by the way? Do you stick around here? Do you hang out, skate with the boys, or do you go back home and do some stuff there?
Yeah, I was home for probably like most of June, most of July, and then I've been back in Philly for almost all August. Yeah, it's pretty easy for me. I'm almost, it's only like a 4.5 hour drive, so it's not too bad. I can pop in and out. But yeah, it's definitely good. We're getting a lot of the guys back now in Philly, so we're getting some better skates going, and you know, we're just getting ready for camp.
Yeah, absolutely. So Chuck Fletcher has obviously made some big moves to the back end and brought in Cam Atkinson, Derek Brassard. You mentioned all the boys getting back together and all. What's the atmosphere like right now, knowing that Chuck, you know, put together a really strong team as we enter the season?
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a lot of excitement. You know, obviously most of our team's pretty new this year. And, you know, I think along with the older guys that we had and the leadership that we already have, I think it's going to be a really good mix. And, you know, I know guys are pretty excited just to get camp going. I think, most guys really just want to get the season started. I think, you know, we've been off for a little bit here and, you know, everyone's ready to start playing hockey again.
Yeah, for sure. So last year for you individually, you had a fantastic season scoring 20 goals. It was tremendous. What did you focus on in that off season to make that jump? You went from 8 goals to 20 and, you know, what was like an emphasis in your off season to have that type of season?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think just trying to, last year, just trying to build a lot of strength in areas and, you know, trying to work on my puck protecting and things like that. And then I think the biggest thing for me was just, you know, playing with that confidence. You know, when I'm playing loose and playing with confidence, that's when I play my best hockey. So I think right from the jump last year, I, you know, started feeling my game a lot better and, you know, just kind of took off from there. So hopefully I can keep that going, you know, as we head into this next season.
Yeah, and I'm curious because you played NCAA, you played at Boston University, played a couple games in the AHL, but what was that jump like? Because you talk about that confidence, and I'm sure as a younger player, you know, you go up against the guys that you watched and all, and now you're involved in it. What is that jump like going from the college game to really the NHL level pretty quickly?
Yeah, for sure. I think for me, it was just a lot of little things, you know, little things you can do to, you know, keep the puck for an extra second or, you know, ways to, you know, get open. I think in college, you know, kind of my skill and things like that kind of took over, so I didn't have to worry about it too much. But when you're playing in the NHL or pro hockey in general, you know, the guys are bigger, they're stronger, so you got to be a little bit smarter and, you know, how you go about the game. So I think just finding those little soft areas, finding ways to get the puck a little bit more on my stick was something I, you know, definitely emphasized in my summer training.
Yeah, absolutely. So Sean Couturier also signed a nice ticket recently. Tell us a little bit about what he means to this team on, first off, in the locker room, because, you know, he rocks a letter on his chest, and of course, what he brings to the table from a two-way perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, just watching Coots as a player, you know, just the way he plays the game, how hard he plays the game, it's, you know, to be a younger guy playing on the same team as him, I definitely look up to him. And then, you know, you add in the off the ice, he's probably one of the best guys around. You know, he's so nice. He cares about every single guy in this organization. So, you know, to get him locked up, I think is huge for this team. And, you know, he's going to be, you know, probably one of the bigger parts, you know, moving forward.
How important is it when you are a younger player? I remember specifically last season, the broadcast was showing you on the bench while the power play was out on the ice, and it was Claude Giroux, Jake Voracek. They set up a play, and they scored off that offensive draw within 5 seconds, and they executed it perfectly. And the broadcast was kind of talking about, because I think you even mentioned it too in a post-game press conference on, you know, picking up on those little things and really studying the vets to see how they do handle those moments, and they do exactly what they said they're going to do prior to getting out there on the ice. How important is it as a younger player to really watch them do those little simple things?
Yeah, 100%. I think even going back to your first question about, you know, the jump from college, I think that was one of the biggest things I noticed, was just how guys in the NHL think the game before and, you know, what's going through their head and stuff like that. Like, I've heard G and Coots talk about face-offs for, you know, hours on end, and it's just insane how they think about it. So, you know, their knowledge is so great, and, you know, just to be able to, you know, listen to them. And, you know, I think there's been a number of times, you know, where I've had a bad game or things like that, and G or Coots have come up, you know, tapped me and made me feel a little bit better. So they're great leaders. You know, I know, I think, you know, heading forward, I think, you know, they're going to be crucial to, you know, how this team moves forward. And, you know, I think like I said, their leadership is so great.
Yeah, we're talking to Joel Farabee, who just signed a 6-year extension with the Flyers. What was it that made you feel comfortable, you know, with this team and the way that their trajectory is to lock up for 6 years?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think even just heading back to the draft, you know, when a team believes in you and things like that, you get a lot of excitement and joy. So, you know, hopefully I can, you know, play in Philly as long as I can. And, you know, to sign this deal, I think it's really nice for me. I'm looking forward to the future here. And, you know, I think we can do some great things.
Do you have any nice spots around town that you like to go to? Any specific restaurants? Where's the local spot? Maybe you don't want to blow it up and people start running into you, but do you got some good spots you like around town?
Yeah, for sure. I think the one great thing about Philly is the food. You know, people always ask me what's great about Philly, and I always say the food. So there's definitely a lot of good restaurants. I'm a huge cheesesteak guy, so being able to get those pretty frequently is nice. If there's one restaurant I had to give a shout out to, it'd probably be Double Knot for sushi. I think that's
wow. I like that. I'm a sushi man myself. You know what I mean? I go for like 6 or 7 rolls, and then I can't move off my couch for the rest of the night.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes for me too.
I love it. So yeah, we're really looking forward to this season, Joel. And when I brought up Chuck Fletcher and the moves that he made previously, we mentioned leadership a lot, but there's been a big emphasis in general on the acquisitions with you got Ryan Ellis, you got Ristolainen, you got Keith Yandel, you're bringing in Cam Atkinson. You brought a lot of guys that wore the A on their chest. When things do go south or sour in an 82-game season, because it is inevitable that sometimes there's some ups and there's some downs, how important are all these additions going to be to making sure the core stays together?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like I said, some guys have been in town, so I've been able to meet a couple of the new guys. And when you get older guys from other teams and things like that, guys who have worn letters and things like that, it brings a lot of knowledge and it brings a lot of trust within each other. So I think we have a really good team on paper, but at the end of the day, we got to go and improve it. So I think this camp's going to be really big for us to, get a good feel for each other. And then, obviously once the season starts, we got to be ready.
I know we're a little bit removed from this, but how bizarre was it when you guys did go to the bubble? And even a little bit last year before fans came back into town, was it tough to get up, or was it once you're in there, the adrenaline's going, it's kicking, and, your instincts take over out there on the ice?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was for sure different. Obviously, playing with no fans in a playoff game. I've never played in a regular playoff game, so for me, it's kind of hard to say. But I think in the bubble, I think they did a great job of the fake crowd noise and things like that. So in terms of getting up for games, I don't think that was an issue. I just think maybe that home ice advantage and things like that was a little bit different in those scenarios because of where we were and in the bubble and things like that. So hopefully with this year, if we can get into the playoffs, I know how the Wells Fargo usually gets, so I'm excited to see if we can get into a playoff spot, what the building will be like.
We'll leave you with this. Do you have a pregame routine, a pregame ritual? Earlier, we were talking about how I need to get my Starbucks coffee on my way to the show, and I have this whole plan, but because of the weather, I'm in for a loop today. I didn't have my coffee, so I'm out of whack. For you, do you have something you need to get done before a game so you're not out of whack?
I don't really think I have anything crazy. I think a lot of hockey guys are pretty similar. They take a nap during the day and things like that. Usually game day is pretty simple for me. I like to keep it loose, kind of just chop it up with the boys in the locker room before, play a little soccer, and then, get my body right. So I try to go into each game with trying to think as least as possible and, just go in there with an open mind and, feeling really good about myself. So probably be the only thing. I don't think I have anything crazy superstitious that I do.
Well, congratulations, Joel. We're really excited to see you here for the next 6 years extended from your current contract. And once again, congratulations. And we're really excited to see the Flyers play this year.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. And, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That is Joel Farabee. Just signed a nice ticket with the Philadelphia Flyers. Had 20 goals last season. Join us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Comcast Business, every day in business is a big day. Let Comcast Business keep you ready for what's next. Joel Farabee, how about that?
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, we are going to bring in Tom Moore, sports columnist for the Bucks County Courier Times, on the Comcast Business Hotline to talk about this Sixers drama that seems to be never ending. Tom, thank you so much for being flexible this morning, and I'm excited to get your thoughts on everything that's happening here.
Yeah, there's plenty going on. I have stuff to do, so whether I do it, before 12:30 or after 12, whenever we go on, it really doesn't matter to me. So that's fine. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right. So why don't we just attack it real quick, just from a broad perspective. Thoughts overall on where we are today with Ben Simmons after the Joel Embiid tweets and the Rich Paul conversation, just where we are today?
Yeah, well, I don't think the Sixers should really be too surprised. I think that, I think they probably had a sense that they were probably going to get here. Perhaps the timing of it, maybe they thought they'd have a little bit more time between now and the start of training camp at the end of September, in whatever it is, a little under 4 weeks now. But maybe if it wasn't public, theoretically the asking price could still be relatively high if that assumes around the league they don't know what's going on, and maybe people were talking about it around the league. I wrote a column yesterday it was online that, you know, there's a lot of blame to go around, and certainly Ben Simmons and his camp, you know, deserve a lot of for the way that they handled this, and, you know, rather than getting better and making free throws and hitting 12-foot jumpers and being aggressive on offense, he regressed. When if he shot 50% from the foul line, they win that series easily. 50%. I'm not talking about 80%. And from the Sixers, you know, they've enabled him. And, I mean, I know stars kind of get whatever they want, but they really have enabled him, you know, the whole time. Whether it was Brett Brown saying, I want him taking a three-pointer every game, and then 20 games later he's taking a total of one three-pointer, and nothing changes. You know, there's no repercussions. You don't get benched. You don't get fined, anything like that. And then Doc Rivers, I point to in the playoffs when you know, Ben Simmons said after one of the games against Atlanta, I got to be more aggressive looking for my shot. And then when Doc Rivers was asked by the media, he said that's not the case. I mean, he was, you know, which his player admitted was true. So they bent over backwards so much to not criticize him, to not, I guess, to try to avoid potentially something like this. And here we are anyway.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. So let's go back to then when Doc Rivers said after Game 7 that he doesn't know if Ben Simmons could be a point guard on a championship-caliber team based off of everything you just mentioned, where all season long it was the complete opposite. Did Doc Rivers play his hand the wrong way? Is it okay for him to be honest in assessing that moment? How do you see the way that Doc handled that last question at the end of the season?
I think he was, Hunter, I think he was kind of like almost in shock. You know, that they had lost three of the last four games, including games 5 and 7 at home, and, you know, had defended. I mean, the last games 5, 6, and 7, Simmons didn't play the entire fourth quarter. Game 7, he sat out the last, I want to say, 40 seconds or so. I mean, because offensively, it was almost like playing 4 and 5. He would bring the ball up, and it would be like a hot potato, and he would give it to somebody and then either run to the dunker spot or in the corner. So you were essentially playing 4 and 5, which means automatically Embiid's double teams because they didn't have to, you know, worry about Simmons. So I think he was kind of stunned and had, you know, gone back, you know, bent over backwards to support Simmons publicly. And I think when he was asked, he just was so surprised. I think he thought, and, you know, most people thought a more experienced, you know, probably more talented, certainly, you know, team with home court advantage somehow loses after having the best home record in the conference during the regular season. I think he was asked a question by David Murphy of the Inquirer, and I think he just answered truthfully that I really don't know, because you have to surround him with shooters. You couldn't play him with Dwight Howard. You could never play him with Dwight Howard and Matisse Thybulle because you have three limited half court offensive players. So you really had to be careful with your rotations, who you play with who. The one positive, the trade, obviously defensively they won't be nearly as good when they trade him, but you could play a more traditional lineup where you don't necessarily have to have four shooters with Ben Simmons, whether you want to call him a point guard, point forward, you know, whatever you want to call him. I guess that's part of the problem. And just like Embiid saying, you know, the turning point was, you know, when we didn't dunk the ball and we only got one free throw when Simmons passed up that open dunk with Trae Young at 6'1" stepping toward him. And he's literally right under the basket where he just has to jump a foot off the ground. And he's got a dunk that would have tied the game up with 3.5 minutes to go. And I think the combination of that, when you don't get any criticism publicly, I think that certainly didn't help matters.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to think about it. If I was Ben Simmons and I heard my coach say that, I would like to think internally, I'd say, all right, I want to prove to my coach and I want to prove to everybody else that I can be that point guard instead of pointing the fingers and saying you backstab me. How about take a little initiative yourself? But how about from a Daryl Morey angle here? Do you believe that he played this wrong with how much he was asking for compensation-wise? Or is that just part of the beast? Like, when you think about a used car salesman, right? You go in there, you go in with the low point, they go in with a high point, and then you meet somewhere in the middle. Did he play it the right way and this unfortunately just unfolded this way, or did he attack it wrong right from the jump?
Well, I think initially, I think asking for the sun, the moon, and the stars is fine because there isn't a sense of urgency. But when Keith, Pompey broke that story, all of a sudden, now if there's any doubt, the other 29 teams in the league see what you could refer to as a distressed asset and think they can get them, at a discount, which will probably be the case. This happened before with Charles Barkley when he wanted out of town in 92. He wasn't happy. He thought ownership was more committed to making money than winning a championship. He had offered to give money back, and wasn't taken up, on the offer. And it happened with Markelle Fultz, although I don't think he necessarily asked for a trade. It was just more that it was the best thing for everybody for him to have a new start, a few years ago, another number one overall, pick. But I guess, we can't really answer that question, Hunter, until we find out what Morey can get in return. Can he get, if you're trading a star and you don't get a star in return, typically, you're not going to win that trade. Like when you trade Charles Barkley and you get Jeff Hornacek, Andrew Lang, and Tim Perry, that's not a win when the next year Barkley takes the Suns to the NBA Finals and is the MVP of the league. Now, the Sixers didn't have a choice because he pretty much demanded that he go somewhere else. He had played 8 years in Philly. So it's a similar situation. And I think, perhaps you can expect a similar return where it is not, unless something happens with Damian Lillard in the next couple weeks and he decides I want out in Portland, I don't see another elite kind of high-level player that you're going to get. It's going to be a very good player or a B-plus level player and another player and maybe a draft pick and potentially a pick swap or something like that in return, if that.
Yeah.
So it remains to be seen, but, yeah, I don't know. I wonder if he would have played it differently if he would have known this was going to come out when it did. But at this point, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. You're right. He probably would maybe think about tinkering his approach if he knows that this is going to play out this way. Do you think it would be, now that we're thinking about the Daryl Morey angle, more beneficial to hold him hostage, basically, and say, look, we'll play chicken with you. We'll fine you. You don't want to show up to training camp, that's fine. Or I sort of look at it with the Eagles approach. Things got ugly with Carson Wentz. Things got super ugly with Doug Peterson. And I'm not saying I love the way that it all played out, but they just snipped it. They went in a new direction. And now you're entering a season with positivity in Zach Ertz. And there's a good vibe surrounding the culture compared to the alternative, which would be another offseason of who Carson Wentz is. Would it be beneficial to play chicken or beneficial to maybe just cut ties, take what you can get, and move in a direction where things are at least comfortable inside the locker room?
Well, I guess it's more, are you willing, to have this be potentially a distraction into training camp, the preseason, and potentially October 20th, starting the regular season in New Orleans? Are you willing to wait and to go that far when Doc Rivers is going to be asked about it? The players are going to be asked about it. I mean, ideally, the answer would be have it taken care of and move on, and it's not a problem. But if the best offer you're going to get is I don't know, let's Malcolm, say
Malcolm
or
Brogdon.
Whatever it is.
What if it's Malcolm Brogdon?
I mean, I like Malcolm Brogdon, but I don't think that that's a fair trade.
Right.
Brogdon's, certainly a better offensive player, but he's not as versatile defensively. He's never been, I don't believe he's been an all defensive guy. He hasn't been the runner up for the defensive player of the year, but you're not dealing from a position of strength. So I guess you have to see what, and if you're Daryl Morey, you hope that multiple teams want him, and when they start talking and if it gets serious and they hear what somebody else is offering, or he says, well, I like what you're offering, but, you know, the Timberwolves in a 3 or 4 team trade are offering, I can get more there. Can, you know, I need more from you, and you hope that that happens. That may or may not be the case. But yeah, do you take the best offer and move on, or do you wait and hope? And, you know, it depends. How does it affect them on the court? You know, who starts in his place if he's still here? Do you find him, which isn't going to help anything? Everybody already knows the situation. You can find him, but it's not going to change anything if that would be the case. My guess is they will take the best offer close to, you know, maybe not media day. They don't have to do it then, but, you know, like during the preseason or, you know, sometime early enough that you can bring somebody in here, give him a chance to get ready. So by the end of October, beginning of November, he or they, if it's multiple guys, can acclimate themselves to, you know, playing here and be comfortable with, you know, with their new teammates.
Yeah, hopefully that's the case they go with, because that's what I would love for them to do. Tom Moore, sports columnist for the Bucks County Courier Times. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
All right, Hunter. Take care.
You too.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.